Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Monday, May 24th, 2021, and this is Foxology. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Monday, one and all. How's your day going thus far? Did you come out of the gates fast and strong today? Or are you in a mood of mulling around on your goals and ideas for the future? Or perhaps you're plotting a plan for your next big thing, your next little thing, your next anything. What are you doing? And I want to know how's it going. Hey, don't tell me that you're at a standstill. I know that that can happen. It's say there's not enough time, not enough experience, not enough money. Okay, I'm going to encourage those of you who just may need it to launch yourself out of the place of not enough. Sometimes you got to find enough effort to go discover your enough of whatever it is you need. It's out there. You know how I know? Because I know there is enough out there for all of us, enough of what you need and what anybody needs. But there's enough with your name on it. And I dare you to step out on your face and go after it. So what will you do? I'll ask again. Well, I'll say this. Go get it. Let's ask my special guest today if she knows what I'm talking about. It's no small thing when you can take your gift to do the extraordinary with it. Her passion for writing has produced over 37 books in various genres. And I tell you, they sound exciting and they are imaginative. And I love something that I read that said that they come with good lessons. You guys know how much I love that. And she takes it on from there as well with many stories developed from her creative genius. She's really something. She is just all around extraordinary. And she's a businesswoman too. Wow. Talk about enough. And if that's not enough, she's writing some more books. She is author extraordinaire, as I said, Jessica Bryan. Jessica, it's great to see you embracing all of the enough within your grasp. Welcome to the Foxology Spotlight.
Well, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here today.
Well,
and by the way,
you're
speaking my language. You're speaking my language. You're absolutely right.
Well, I'm glad you had enough time to be here with me.
I put everybody on hold.
That's how we do it.
Yes.
Well, we're going to talk about your work and your genius. I marvel at it, and I'm not just saying that. I have, written a lot of stuff, but to actually go through the process of getting over 37 books done, I don't even know how to wrap my head around that. I think that is just so super. And let's just start out talking about that, since I talked about the enough that we all have the opportunity to grasp in our lives. Why don't you just give us the backdrop on that? I know you published your first book as a little girl.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, well, writing is just part of me. It's the way I express myself best. And, you know, it's really funny because when I speak, I don't speak as well as I write. But, you know, it's just one of those things. But I come from a family of storytellers. My dad used to sit around the table amusing us with his stories of his youth. And there was always a lot of humor. a lot of wisdom, a lot of joy that was associated with writing. And I guess I just, you know, fell into it. My mom was also a really good writer, and neither of them ever did anything with it other than just amuse the family. But I started writing, and my very first work was poetry, and it was published when I was in, I was trying to remember, it was either third or fourth grade, but the teacher that had encouraged me to write poetry was so impressed, and she got it published. And I remember I was reading it on the radio, and I was like so excited about the idea that, you know, people could actually hear what I had written. And so it kind of inspired me to continue. But I never did anything professionally with it. I got sidetracked. I became a real estate agent and then a broker here in, well, in Los Angeles and then here in North Carolina when I moved. So, you know, that kind of sidetracked me. But when I became a grandparent, I started writing for my grandchildren. And, of course, I had written all along, but this time around I decided that others would enjoy this too. And so then I started publishing, and from one thing to another, it went from children's books to all the books that I had within me that I really wanted to write for grown-ups as well. So that's how it started.
Well, it's truly amazing. I have to ask this too, because I know the intensity of writing, and I know that a lot of it truly is creative. A lot of it is strategic, but much of it is creative. I try to, as I said, I'm trying to wrap my mind around it. When are your times for writing? Do you have a time that you set aside to really get into it? Do you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and produce a book? What happens?
So, yes. And yes and no. It depends. If I am working on a book, I become very involved in the book, and I will spend more time on the book. But, you know, I tell everybody the same thing. You know, you meet people all the time who say, oh, I would love to be able to write a book. I've got this book inside of me, but I just can't find the time. And I find that the most important thing is to treat anything you do as something. When you set an intention, all you're doing is saying the words and then, you know, intending to do it, but it's the plan. It's the goal and the plan that keep you on track. So when I intend to write a book, I come up with my plan, which is, well, you know, I know that my morning starts pretty early, and I am a broker in charge of Real Living Carolina Lifestyles Realty here in Chapel Hill area. And so I get a lot of agents who are calling me with questions and whatnot, and I like to be available to them. So obviously my plan is going to go awry if somebody's got an emergency. So getting up earlier and maybe spending a half an hour is a possibility before the calls start. But usually I find it's at the end of the day. And my husband, Skip, who is just a wonderful person, we've been married for 52 years.
Oh, my, that's awesome.
I know. And, you know, I think that it's really a fun thing that he is so much part of my life that he has become pretty much the structure of my writing as well. But he will turn off the TV and say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to go to bed. And he knows that I'm not going to go to bed at the same time. I'm going to stay up and I'm going to write for about an hour after he goes to bed. And this is my hour. And even when I force myself to stop, I very often will continue thinking a little bit more about what I wanted to write, that it gives me that little tidbit that makes me want to continue on. And I say this to people, if you can carve out 5-10 minutes every morning, it's the same way. And I do that, you know, the process either way, from morning or night. Carve out whatever time you wish, and if it's 5 minutes only, just take that 5 minutes and establish a habit every morning, 5 minutes of writing. and walk away at the end of 5 minutes. You've made a promise to yourself. You're treating it like a job. If you work 8 to 5, you don't walk out at 4:30. You finish working at 5 o'clock. Report in at whatever time, 7:30 in the morning. Write for your 5 minutes or your 10 minutes or whatever it is that you have that you can spare and walk away. And what happens is when you walk away, your mind doesn't stop. Your mind continues working, and you can't wait to sit down the next day and write some more. And therefore, the process is an exciting one instead of like, oh, I have to write another page. And then it just doesn't happen. So for me, I very seldom get writer's block. I mean, there are very few times. And I, again, treating it like a fun job, something I really enjoy and something I don't really want to stop doing, but I have to because I've got other things to do. I come back with the same kind of gusto and excitement and a little bit every day, and I end up with a book. Of course, I don't write for 5 minutes. I tend to write for an hour, you know, but if you wrote an hour every day, think of how many books you could write. You know, an hour will produce at least 2-3 pages, you know, and that's the process I use.
That's really incredible, and I'm glad you shared that information because it is a discipline. And, if you can allocate that time every day, I like what you just said. All of a sudden, you have a book.
That's right.
So I've heard some people write books in 2 weeks, and I like the process that you just described. So at your own pace and how you develop it is totally up to the person, but I'm glad you shared your strategy with us. Well, I do want to talk about those books, and the one that I would like to start with is Calamity Central, because when we chatted over emails, you talked about some of the humorous stories that led up to that one. And I said to you, well, I really do think that we could use some humor right now in our current atmosphere. And we'll talk some about the others too. But let's talk about how that one, that particular book came together.
Well, anybody who knows me, if we go out to dinner or, you know, a party, I usually end up telling at least one or two very, very funny stories because I have this life that is, I don't know, calamitous. It's calamitous in a very funny
don't
way.
We all?
Yes, yes. And even the title of the book is a calamity because as I began to write it, I got tired of transposing my journal that I had been keeping. I had kept a journal in 1993 because my life was so chaotic that I thought nobody is ever going to believe what is going on in our household. We had two teenage children. Our son had just turned 18 and decided to start a band, a rock band, and he invited two of the guys who had nowhere to live to our home to live with us. Our daughter was 3 years younger, and she developed a crush on the drummer. And the guys are living with us, so of course we're patrolling at night. You know, we're making sure everything is good. We had two cats, a dog, and decided that we were also going to get a brand new rambunctious puppy. And because that's not enough, I decided that my mother-in-law should come and visit us for a month. So you can imagine the household. And, you know, from there, we have an extended family that my parents had lived four doors up the street, and they were always popping in. So it was just always chaos in the house with the drummers and the, you know, everything going on. So
kind of like Grand Central Station.
Absolutely, absolutely. So as things were happening, and lots of things happened that were really very, very funny, I would write them down, and then that would remind me of a funny story that happened a few years earlier or whatever. So here we are, you know, fast forward to 2020, which is, you know, horrific, and everybody's home, and boo-hoo, we're all sad and depressed, and I thought, we need some laughter. And I pulled out this journal, and I started laughing. And I thought, okay, that's it. You know, I'm going to write this up. But I don't transpose to, you know, I don't sit there and type off of notes well. I type out of my head, not off of a piece of paper. So I decided that I was going to try transposing. So I was doing word to text. And I tried this for the first time. It worked beautifully. I got the whole book done, word to text. You know, it was great technology. I take the book and send it to an editor who calls me and says, this is really funny stuff. I loved it. Oh, I found a few typos, changed a few things, and sent it back to me. Well, it's all ready to go, right? Only I didn't realize that the technology will take my words and translate them the way the technology hears it, not the way I said it. And so as I got the book published and I'm reading, just kind of reading a page or two, all of a sudden, to my shock and dismay, I realized that it has transposed everything incorrectly. There are things in there that are just horrible, things that make no sense, and it's out in publication. So I actually, you know, I was looking through it recently, and I'm going, I can't, oh my gosh, I have to pull this off, but I haven't yet. So I'm going through and doing a slow edit, and then eventually will, you know, republish a second publication.
Yeah.
But, oh, my goodness. So there's a calamity right there. But anyway, yes, I had so many funny stories in the book that every time I pick it up and read it, I'm reminded of those times, and it's like, oh, gee. You know, if I think it's funny, I bet there are a few other people that will think so, too, and I have gotten some excellent feedback off of it.
Well, I'm waiting for you to tell us something. Share some of those stories with us.
Well, would you like me to read something to you?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, absolutely.
So each calamity that I experience is a chapter in and of itself, and so I had to be brief on this one. And so I've edited out a lot of this story. I hope it still translates to be enjoyable. And I will skip a few paragraphs where I'll let you know I'm skipping just so that I can make this a little bit briefer. I've never skied because I'm afraid of heights and ski lifts. But when we went to Tahoe with some other friends one year, they talked me into going cross-country skiing. I agreed to try it and borrowed some ski clothes for the occasion. My girlfriend had a very short friend who was willing to lend me a ski jacket. It must have been a size 1, but at least it covered my chest and arms, and if I pulled down on it, it reached my waist. Another friend had a pair of bulky nylon ski pants that she bought at a rummage sale. They must have been 20 years old when she bought them. They were fastened at both sides with Velcro. The Velcro looked like it had been washed one too many times and had lost its springiness. I tried the pants on. They fit snugly, but they were passable. Next came the thermal underwear, a turtleneck and bottoms. I didn't need to look any further than my son's room. Although at the time he was still shorter than I was, the thermals had enough give and stretch to them that I could pull them down and up respectively. The bottoms presented only a minor problem. Their natural inclination was to stop at my knees, but my ski pants held everything in place nicely. What I didn't realize was that it all depended on the Velcro holding, which it did as long as I stood up straight. The moment I bent over to put my shoes on, however, the Velcro tabs gave way, the pants fell, and the thermal shot down to my knees. Meanwhile, up above, the turtleneck top and the ski jacket rode up to reveal a bare midsection. No problem, I said to myself. I won't be bending over. So off we went to cross-country ski school. The sky was looking more and more threatening. By the time we arrived at our destination, snowflakes had begun to fall. The temperature had dropped almost 20 degrees by the time our lessons began. Mary, the mountain woman, was our instructor. She told us to put our skis on. I knew immediately that this was a grievous error. The skis were much narrower than alpine skis. When I put them on, I found that I had lost all control of my legs. One leg went north and one went south in gymnastic splits, while my torso toppled east and west. When I finally managed to pull everything back together, I realized that I was feeling quite a draft in my nether regions. It was then that I noticed that the Velcro fasteners had popped on my pants, and they were now situated uncomfortably around my knees along with my thermal underwear. My jacket and top were bunched up around my throat, and the rest of me was clothed only in goosebumps. I prayed that no one had seen me as I made a feeble attempt to restore my dignity. Meanwhile, Mary was now cheerfully explaining the mechanics of cross-country skiing. It's kind of a skating motion. Just lean into your skis and off you go. I heard no other words. I froze in my tracks. She had said the L word, lean. As the rest of the class began practicing the motion in various degrees of fluidity, I stood stiffly in my skis and made moves like Frankenstein's monster. Now, I'm going to stop here and describe that for the next several paragraphs, I explained a series of mishaps that all end with me lying naked and embarrassed in the snow. And I'm going to skip forward to the next paragraph here. The class had skied ahead of me, and Mary stopped working with me, allowing me to regain a shred or two of dignity. When they turned back in my direction, they queried how I was doing. "I've got the hang of it now," I shouted. "I just needed a few minutes alone to perfect my style." "Oh, let's see how you're doing," exclaimed Mary. Oh, no, now the whole class was watching. I took a few careful shuffles to the chorus of stifled giggles. My pride was getting the better of me, and forgetting myself, I punctuated my next shuffle with a lean. I don't need to describe how I ended up. The look on everyone's face reflected exactly what I knew was true. I was naked as a jaybird and looking quite blue. Skip, my knight in shining armor, helped me up and tried dusting the snow off my back. "You look like you're freezing," he said with concern. "I am," I replied miserably. "Well," he said, "once you get moving, you'll warm up. Look at me. I've broken a sweat." And it goes on. And the instructor takes us up a cliff or a mountain. Well, it was a cliff because there was a rushing river on the other side. And I was fine going up the mountain until I had to go back down the mountain. And then I had to lean in front of the whole class. Anyway, it's a whole chapter about this. So you kind of get the idea of the tone.
Yeah. Cute. Very cute.
Thank you.
I was imagining this outfit. The image I had was funny enough.
Yeah, I'm sure I looked lovely.
Oh my goodness.
Especially
how
with
cute
my blue
hat. Well, you certainly are very gifted, Jessica. That was very easy to visualize as you described the entire scenario. How beautiful and how cute.
Thank you.
And so this book then has many stories that are all comical. Is that the theme?
Yes, they're all humorous.
Oh my
stories.
Gosh!
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that you feel you need to do a rewrite on before we buy it.
Well, yes. I mean, I just have to change words. I mean, you know, they're "thes" instead of "she's." I don't know. I mean, you know, it just interpreted things incorrectly, and you know, it's still funny, but I'm not illiterate. You know, and it looks like I am when you read
the
book.
Well, I'll tell you. Talking to text will make you seem illiterate.
Yeah,
that's for
really.
Sure. I do it all the time on my phone and dinner.
Good. Yeah. Well,
they are.
Yeah, I'm pretty careful when I do the work. You know, when I actually am typing, and so I'm never going to do the text thing again. That just was that was madness.
That's flatlined, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, just by listening to you, and again, it's so easy to know that you are an extraordinary writer, and I'm glad that I said that, because if you read enough, you know what sets them apart from the others. That was that was extraordinary. Very, very.
Oh, thank you.
Gifted
writing.
You
know, it's really interesting because people have said to me, when they read my books, and I do write some serious books too, but they say, you know, your books are very relatable. Now, I do like trying different genre, and the last book I just finished and just got published is a series of short stories, and they're written for people who have cognitive disorders or memory issues, so people with Alzheimer's and dementias would really enjoy this because the stories are no more than 700 words. And so it really challenged me, excuse me, in a way that I had not been challenged before, because I just write from my soul. You know, I just, whatever's on my mind, I just write about it. And sometimes it's beautiful, sometimes it's evocative of memories, sometimes it's just sad, sometimes it's happy. But, you know, people relate. And I have never tried to do something where I have to really hone in on the real pièce de résistance right away. So, you know, these little stories provide morsels that are very emotional and very uplifting. All of the stories had to be uplifting because I was really focused on whoever is reading this, they are either living with dementia or they are a family member who is reading to somebody who is sick or in need of help, and therefore you want to be uplifting. And you want to remind them of good times or sweet moments in their lives. And so it was quite an interesting journey for me to hone in and be that tight with my writing.
Well, I tell you, that's a wonderful, wonderful take on things to provide something that can be, you know, something that can truly be a uplifting. And
yes.
To both to the person that has the Alzheimer's or dementia, and also I'm sure to caregivers and family as well.
Right.
That was a wonderful area to launch out into. I know that you also have written, again, you just got that creative genius. You also have quite a few mystery books that you've written as well.
Yes.
How did that all come about? I know that, it, was that, see, how can I ask this? Because I can understand how some of the inspiration for Calamity came along and the book that you just described. So you also have that thing where you just have that little investigative part of you too, huh?
Yes. Well, a mystery, I've always loved puzzles. And a mystery to me is solving a puzzle, and it's a fun game. So as you start writing a mystery, you figure out how you're going to leave little crumbs for the reader.
Mm.
And I've always just enjoyed reading mysteries myself, and to me, even when my kids were young, I would write mysteries for their school. We'd do plays and things, but they were always mysteries, and I just find that it's almost like a game for the kids. And our granddaughters love mysteries too now. As a matter of fact, the book I'm going to be starting, I'm just beginning my research now, my little granddaughter Lily insisted that I write another Emma and Jen book, which is, she's 9 years old, and so she's really into these action-adventure mysteries. And I've written them not as children's books, but as family books, family entertainment. And I did it with the thought that, you know, families don't spend a lot of time together. There's too much TV, too many electronics. And if a family reads together and they can solve a mystery together, it's kind of a fun thing. So that's kind of the way I do my, and I don't want to say children's books, but that genre is a family mystery. And you know, G-rated. You know, I don't put a lot of violence and bad words and sex and all of that in there. It's just something that everybody can enjoy, all ages. So anyway,
well,
that's why I like mysteries.
Yeah, and also that is such a great concept as well. Well, I know that listeners are going to want to know how to reach out to you and where they can find all these books. But before we tell them that, what are some of your faves?
What are some?
I know they
I'm
must
sorry.
All be. Of course.
Oh,
what's some of
well,
your favorites?
So you know, I have. It's really hard to answer, but I had a book that I wrote called My Big Golden Book of Gratitudiousness, because gratitudiousness, the word, was more than gratitude. And it was a philosophy that I developed, being in the moment and focusing. I became so grateful for every moment. And it was at a time where we discovered that my mom's Alzheimer's had gotten really bad, and we were going to have to take her and take care of her at home. And, you know, instead of feeling sad and sorry about things, I began to develop gratitude. And it really changed the way I saw things. And every day I would sit down and write about something for which I was very grateful. And it really helped me through a difficult time, but it also has helped a lot of other people. It's one of those books where you can sit down and read a few pages and just feel good. And
mm-hmm.
It also taught a lot of lessons. It was almost, it was a cerebral experience in a way, and it also got me really into that God source. And I really felt like I was able to see things a lot more clearly and to appreciate things and really feel deep down inside that love, and it permeated that book. So I'm very proud of that work. I also really am proud of the books that I wrote while I was caring for my mother. So there's a series of four caregiver books that are very funny, and I wasn't laughing at my mother. I was laughing at the situation, because there were experiences in that time period that were hysterical if you were an outsider looking in. And so very often I would have to sort of detach myself to look in and say, oh, yeah, okay, this is really kind of funny. So, but people that read those books say it's like personal therapy. They love it, and it's not just about Alzheimer's. It's just about finding your strength and your inner resilience and your flexibility. And, you know, we humans are very resilient, but sometimes we kind of go through experiences where we say, I can't make it. I can't do this. And the word can't is just so crippling. And so to be able to experience that you can, and to actually fulfill that can and see the other side, see that light at the end of the tunnel, is a wonderful experience. So I'm very proud of those books as well. The first one being I Am Not a Village. That was the title. But, you know, when you look me up on Amazon, you can find all of my books. My mysteries are a lot of fun. I really like The Farmhouse, which was the first adult thriller. It's a supernatural thriller. Doesn't have a lot of lessons in it. It was just my attempt to just have a fun time, a good romp in, you know, a kind of a mystery and thriller. And then I went on a cruise and I wrote Salome Smith with a Y. It's S-M-Y-T-H-E. And that's funny, but it's also a thriller and a good mystery. And it was the first time I ever used bad words in print. So I had to go around apologizing to everybody, because there were a couple of scenes where I just, you can't say, oh, darn.
You needed to do that, right?
It needed it. Because the bad guys, they don't talk nice.
Right.
Anyway, but yeah, so there's a few of them.
Tell you what, you really are a gift to the literary world, and I want to thank you for sharing what you have with me today and with the audience. And I tell you, I'm really amazed. I didn't say all of that just to be making radio talk. I think you're pretty incredible, and I really do appreciate you taking time to talk with me today and share a part of what you do with the listeners. And I would love to stay in touch because I find it, as I said, is very fascinating. Tell us again. I thought I had put all of that information on my page. It looks like I'm going to have to redo that part, all of your links. But will you share with the audience all of the places that they can find you?
Oh, goodness, yes. Well, I'm on Facebook. You can look me up on Books by Jessica Bryan on Facebook. And on Amazon.com, I have my own author page. So let's see if I can find this. I've got like a link that's not the same thing, but it's Amazon.com. I do a /author/Bryan Jessica. And I think the link is not that way, but, you know, that's the way I get to it. So did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm, great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful, wonderful. And I'm sure you must get tapped for speaking engagements and things like that as
well.
Oh,
I do. Yes, I do.
Where should people try to connect with you?
So they can reach me on email, JJBryan, B-R-Y-A-N, JJBryan01@gmail.com.
Okay, great. All right. Well, again, I want to thank you, and I just say keep up the continued success and keep on being phenomenal, and I'm going to be watching. I'm sure
thank you so much. It was such a pleasure talking to you today, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you. You enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you. Bye.
And I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen in today to hear all of that inspiration. I haven't had many authors talk about how they put things into development, and I just am grateful for Jessica sharing. Certainly, she has all of the experience and expertise that she can help all of us who are doing such things. So I hope you were able to glean that from her, and that you can go ahead if necessary and put pen to paper or put your fingers on that computer or dare to talk and text your stories. But whatever you do, the key thing is, as I said earlier when my intro, just go get it. Go do whatever it is that you need to do, whether it's writing or business or going back to school or whatever it is, your next anything. You've got somebody over here on Foxology cheering you on. So I'm going to look forward to talking to you the very next time, which will be next Monday. And in the meantime, you guys be good, be blessed, be awesome, and stay safe.